And on your radio, it's 810. News Talk 810. I'm Chris Brecher, KGO Radio News.
All right, ready for a different hour. You're going to have it right now. I'd like you to meet Paul Witke. Now, this is a gentleman who is the CEO of the Alliance of CEOs, the Alliance of Chief Executives. And what it is, well, I'll let him tell you what it is, but what we want to talk about is usually when you think of a CEO, there are negative feelings. I had kidded around at the beginning, at the end of the last hour, and I said something to the effect of, you know, I don't hate Bob Iger, never met him. I don't know who Bob Iger really is, except that he's the big guy with Disney ABC. That said, the guy makes a kabillion times more than I do. I'm not going to like that. I don't like anybody who makes a kabillion times more than that. Is that a natural feeling? Should I feel that way, or should I say, you know, guys like that are wonderful?
Ron, I think that's very human. People, impressions of CEOs are gained by what they read in the press and they see in the media, and the ones who make the news are the ones who are either in the news for doing huge things and getting huge compensation, or they're crooks and they're brought down by the system and are made ridicule.
And you think that's yes or no when it comes to justifiable? Do you think that's a legitimate way of looking at CEOs?
I think it creates a false impression, just like it does in virtually every type of endeavor or type of job. I think you could take a look at talk show hosts, for example. Probably the two that come to mind to most people if you ask them who's the most famous talk show hosts are Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern. What are they talking about nowadays with Howard Stern? How much money does Howard paid to switch to Sirius?
Yeah.
Do you love him or do you hate him?
Howard? We got the same agent. I wish I had his contract. No, here's the thing. I mean, first of all, let me approach it from a different direction. Is there a certain, like, personality type that's a CEO? Because I think of ones that I know, and they're all across the map, but what kind of a person becomes a CEO?
That's a great question. I personally have interviewed probably a couple thousand CEOs in the last 10 years. And, frankly, I think there's only two common threads that I see, because some of them are incredibly intelligent, and others are very average and normal in intelligence. But there's two things I see.
All right, greed is one. What's the other?
No.
Teasing. Go ahead.
Frankly, very few, I think, are driven by that. They're not dumb. They do try to make money and earn money for their families and their shareholders. But number one is passion. These people are passionate about something. They are trying to make a difference in the world. It may be curing cancer or some new technology, or it may be competition that they grew up in sports and they just want to continually to get better and to win. Or it can be passionate about the type of company they have. Maybe they used to work in a company that was just a terrible place to work, and the boss was terrible, and so they wanted to create an environment where people liked working with each other and liked coming to work, and they zealously protect that culture within the organization. But frankly, all of them are passionate about doing something. And the second thing I see is these people take action. They don't whine very much. They don't just complain about something and not do something. If something's not working, and it could be in their business or in their lives, they take action and do something about it.
And that covers all the styles, because I mean, you get some CEOs who are just hands-on, others are very kind of aloof. You got some CEOs who are very positive, they encourage employees, others are constantly pitting department against department, trying to get fights going on. You're saying these two characteristics, though, are in both of those types of people?
I believe so. I think the ones, they may have different styles in how they lead people or run companies, but generally if they're successful, they have a vision of what they're trying, why they're there. Why are these people coming together to make a difference in the world? You know, whether it is to help fight disease or to create new technology or something that's really cool.
Well, then here's somebody who instantly comes to mind. Then explain, he's been on the show, that's not the point, but explain like a Donald Trump. I don't think he's trying to fight disease. Yes, he does some charitable stuff, but what would motivate a guy like that? If he really has like, what does he think, $4-7 billion, something like that, owns half of Manhattan, the common reaction to, I think, a lot of people, I know mine would be, I had $4 billion. Of course, I'd want to do good for society, but I'd be on some cruise ship somewhere, or I'd be on a beach in the French Riviera. Why do I have to work? Why?
Frankly, I can't answer that question. I probably would be too.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump is one. Frankly, you've met him. I have not had that privilege. Or
didn't shake hands with him because he doesn't shake hands.
But I mean, that's just... Donald could. There are exceptions to every rule.
Right.
And Donald could be that exception that is driven. I believe Donald is driven probably more by ego, about being the man, being both on with all that money. Why do you have to do a television show?
Interesting, because I was going to ask that at some point in the hour. Is ego another one of those characteristics? I can't imagine being a CEO and not having an ego.
No, but I think there's two authors on leadership, and I'm no expert on anything but my family, but
right.
But I do meet with a lot of leaders, and there's probably two authors I really, really embrace that talk about leadership. One is Jim Collins, wrote the book Good to Great,
mm-hmm.
and he talks about the level 5 leadership, and really to get to the 5th level, a lot of that is about humility and how they really focused on the organization itself and creating results, but giving all the credit to other people within the organization for making it happen and taking all the blame for any bad decisions themselves. Another one's Patrick Lencioni, who's a local author here and has written a number of best-selling books. His first book was called The 5 Temptations of a CEO. And the very first temptation was choosing status over results.
And explain that. I'm not sure I get that.
Status is where it's personal status, ego, mm-hmm. where it's all about them
mm-hmm.
rather than what is the mission or the vision of what they're trying to create. So it's if you were a biotech company trying to cure cancer, is the person doing it looking for personal ego gratification by I was the person that cured cancer, or is he building an organization to cure cancer and it's the team that gets all the credit?
Sure got the answer in this place. Anyway, in the studio with us right now is Paul Wittke. We're talking about CEOs. There's this natural aversion, but deep down, you always say, I wouldn't mind being a CEO. Not just the money, but, boy, I could run things better. I could do things better. We're going to talk a little bit about what it takes to be a CEO and your feelings towards it. 808-0810 is our number, 808-0810. Email kgo.com or ron@rnn.com. But to get on the air, 808-0810. We'll get to the phones. Have some fun right after this. Paul Wittke, he created the Alliance of Chief Executives. He's in the studio with us right now. We're talking CEOs. Hey, Frank in Sausalito, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I was hoping your guests might be able to address a little bit of the brutal reality of being a CEO, the hours involved, the dedication, and the sacrifices that go into being a CEO. The checks and balances between shareholders, board of directors, and the constant, really hounding for performance based on performance-driven incentives. But what I wanted to mention was, nobody has a hard time with, well, some people do, the overpaid athletes. And the bottom line is, if you can throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, the Yankees want to talk to you. There's very few people that can do it. And I think running a major multinational corporation is the same way. They need the best and the brightest. If you get the best and the brightest, you're going to be in the playoffs next year. You could even, consider it on that level of a sports analogy that you need top talent. And there's not one person in my company, which is an airline, that thinks they couldn't do a better job than the CEO. And there's a huge disparity in information between employees and the CEO. And I think the best thing we could do to help corporate America today is bring that disparity of information between labor and management together through education and understanding of business fundamentals and how things really work and understand each other's side.
Boy, you're eloquent. You support his point of view. Not quite as controversial as I wanted, but I got to believe you think he's right in the park.
He should be sitting in my seat. Yeah, I really couldn't say it any better. The CEOs today face incredible challenges and typically need to make decisions balancing between the interests of the shareholders, which many of us are through our mutual funds and our retirement plans. They're invested in all these companies, and mm-hmm. we expect growth and earnings and employees who want to get stable, have stable jobs and get paid more every year.
All right. Without giving a name, trust me, I do genuinely know this person. How about a CEO who runs a major transportation company? Transportation company goes bankrupt, gets hired by another one. Same field. That one goes bankrupt, gets hired by another one. You say to yourself, what's going on here? And that happens.
Frank, our listener, had the answer for that one as well. If you take the sports analogy, how many of the managers, baseball managers and football coaches that go one place and get fired get rehired to try to do the same thing somewhere else.
Well,
the board of directors hires the best person they think they can find, and someone they know versus someone that hasn't run a company before. Sometimes they choose the known quantity, even if they fail.
Is it still an all boys network?
It's certainly dominated by males. Women have certainly made inroads, but it's still slow.
What's preventing them from becoming CEOs? Carly Fiorina?
No, I think it's just it just takes time.
All right, we'll throw it out there. We got lots of calls. We're talking CEOs. In the studio with us right now is Paul Wittke. I'm Ron Owens. This is KGO. Our time, 10:22. The topic, CEOs. The guest, Paul Wittke. The caller, Rob in San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning. Two things. One is, I understand the whole thing is paying top dollar for the best and the brightest, but I keep hearing stories about these board of directors that will hire somebody to come in. He's supposedly going to be a person that's going to bring value to the company and turn the company around or just be the best person for the job. And then they do a terrible job, and they walk away with this huge package of money for basically failing. And I'm wondering, is that very common? And the other thing is, I keep hearing also about mergers that happen when one company will buy another one out or one company will merge with another, and usually sometimes the shareholders end up losing out, but these CEOs walk away with all this money, you know, and it just seems like it's an awful waste of money for CEOs to get these giant bonuses or payouts or golden parachutes when they're actually just walking away from the company and leaving it with nothing. And when is that kind of thing going to change, or is that just an anomaly that doesn't happen very often and we just hear about it because it's good news?
I can't agree with you more on the high end, on the some of the Fortune 500 companies where the boards have had some outrageous packages for people who have failed and then left the companies. My perspective actually is that it is an anomaly, as you mentioned. The Fortune 500 is a very small percentage of the 14 million businesses in this country. Most are small, mid-sized businesses. The CEOs don't get paid. Frankly, most of them are privately held, so the CEOs make whatever the business earns. If the business isn't making money, and most businesses ultimately do fail, there's a very high turnover of businesses. Oftentimes, the CEOs of those businesses make less than what they pay their employees. So it really is an anomaly for the
backtrack. CEOs make less than the employees? What percentage?
In many small businesses, while they're starting up or failing.
A couple of people.
No, in businesses.
If you run a big business, you're not going to make less than the employees.
If you lose money and you own that company, you pay yourself last.
Sheila, calling from a cell phone in Gonzales. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I think I would like the author to define what he thinks a CEO is. I mean, my question was not that, but when he describes a small business person as a CEO, I can relate personally to that one. I think it's really important that he define what he's talking about as a CEO, but my original question was, I do believe that the CEOs of the international corporations and massive national corporations are really rip-off artists, and I believe that there is certainly a conflict of interest by their boards because the boards hire and CEOs serve on other people's boards, and I think it's something that really needs to be cleaned up badly.
Okay, first of all, your first point, the definition of a CEO, yes, my definition is very broad. It is the leader of the company, and it's extremely diverse. Typically, when we talk about CEOs, we are thinking about Fortune 500 public company CEOs, the ones that are in the media. But there's also CEOs or chief executives or business owners of small, mid-sized businesses, and sometimes they have outside investors. So, frankly, that's why we call our organization the Alliance of Chief Executives
mm-hmm.
rather than the Alliance of CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
So she has a great point there. And most
of course, the website is AllianceOfCEOs.com.
It's shorter.
Okay.
Thank you.
As far as the boards are concerned.
Again, at the Fortune 500 level, there's an awful lot of conflict of interest where CEOs sit on other boards, and those boards decide the compensation for the CEOs, for the executives, and it does happen, and there are some egregious. But there's also some excellent, well-run Fortune 500 companies as well. We don't hear about them as often.
It is interesting, if you go back in time, the first CEO that pops into my head as somebody who was, quote, a personality was Lee Iacocca. For whatever reason, he was the guy that was in the forefront of a lot of changes, and people liked him. Now you think of a CEO, and probably you think Kenny Boy before anything else. You think of a guy like a Ken Lay. Now, how much of an aberration is this guy, and what's going to happen to him?
He did what we think he did, and he certainly was the leader of a company that just was a catastrophe for many people. I think he should go to jail. I think they should throw the book at him. I think business leaders have a responsibility to be held to, we should hold them to a higher standard. And when they break trust, they should be penalized to the fullest.
From a cell in San Jose. Hey, Tim, good morning and welcome to KGO.
Hey, good morning, Ron. I just wanted to make a point, and this is geared more towards the Fortune 500. And I think what really chaps most people in this country is the fact that CEOs, you know, on average are making about 500 times what the average worker makes. And when you compare that to international corporations, it's way out of whack. Number two, you know, no one's going to feel sorry for the CEOs in this country for a bunch of other reasons. And, you know, they don't go home worrying about food and shelter like workers do here. Now, I'm a senior manager at a very large, successful public corporation in the Silicon Valley. And I also disagree with your point that companies need to get the best CEOs for these corporations to be successful. I don't believe it's the CEO that makes the company, but I do believe it's the CEO that can break the company. I've seen so many local corporations, I'll name some of them, like 3Com, where the board allows the CEO to perform terribly. But yet, at the end of the day, in the 7 years that this guy's been there, he's taken home over $10 million. But the stock went from 70 to 4 bucks while he's been as CEO. So there's something categorically wrong with the way the board actually grades the CEOs and why the shareholders don't speak out even more. So it's not really a question, but it's more of a point I wanted to make.
Frankly, most of your points I agree with. I do believe that, the CEO as an individual of these major companies can fail it very quickly, but success is very long term. And to really be successful in building a great company, generally it's not the CEO, it's the CEO's vision and leadership and communication and passion that creates a great teamwork and a clear consensus among the employees and the entire team that understands what the company's all about. If the CEO is really successful, the CEO could take a year off and the company could run without it. So I agree with you. But it takes a really leader to create that type of environment.
I got to go back to a quick, subtle ego question. We talked about CEOs and egos before. Now, you're the CEO of the Alliance of Chief Executives. How can you sit there for half an hour and have me mispronounce your last name?
It's not about me.
Ron Owens in the studio, Paul Whitkay.
Thank you,
Laura. Laura said, I mean, you never correct it. It's not about you. He is the head of the Alliance of Chief Executives. Now, what do you got? How many people are in that? A couple hundred
CEOs.
And who are they? They're all from
owners,
here?
Small business owners, medium-sized companies, some global public companies.
And what do you, just network, or what do you do?
No, we're really not a networking organization.
So you lobby?
Nope, not at all.
What do you do? You have good parties?
Occasionally, but frankly, all we do is very simple. We bring them together in environments where they can really honestly talk with each other. It really is a challenging job. I think your first caller, Frank, talked about the different challenges of balancing the needs, and the world is changing so fast. You just showed me your new cell phone that does live television on the cell phone. Things are changing so fast, and the CEOs have a responsibility to build successful businesses that can hopefully grow and build more jobs and compete. And they can't possibly know it all. So if you get them in a room where they can actually talk with each other honestly, candidly, and share ideas, share knowledge, and actually brainstorm together, some incredible things happen.
You know, that kind of bounces off that old concept, and you know, I've heard it before with CEOs. Well, it's lonely at the top. I mean, I put that in the same category as, I don't know, some major media star, Jennifer Aniston, complaining about too many people looking at you. I mean, you've chosen the job. That's what it is.
That's right.
I'm lonely at the top. Too bad. Anyway, caller says he wants a CEO that sounds as nice as you. All right. Margaret in Mountain View, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to mention something that I think is undervalued. Yes, you have to have, of course, the talent and the expertise for a company, but you really have to be a psychologist almost on the side to manage people. And I think oftentimes people are placed in positions where they may have expertise, but they're not good people managers. And I think that, you know, it's best typified by that funny show called The Office, where they have a CEO who is constantly trying to fit in with the people in the company that he manages, and constantly over, you know, he tries so hard that it never quite works. And so I think that's a whole other aspect
that can contribute to or keep people from being successful.
Margaret, you're absolutely right. The challenge of being a CEO, they not only have to be smart, but they have to be able to motivate people and communicate clearly, and that combination of skills is really very rare. I mentioned before one of my favorite authors and friends, Patrick Lencioni. He talks about making healthy companies. And that's one of the things where if a CEO does fail, that's the typical area they fail in, is they're typically very smart. They know their industry. They can talk about technology and market trends. But being able to build teamwork and having the people work together is a very difficult task.
In the studio, Paul Whitkay. He is a CEO and the head of the Alliance of CEOs. Again, we mispronounced the name for a half hour, and he never said a word about it because, as he said, it's not about me. I'm Ron Owens. This is the Ron Owens Program. Yeah, it's about me. He is the head of the Alliance of Chief Executives. He is Paul Whitkay. Here's another Paul who I don't think is on the same page with you, Paul. Paul in San Leandro, your turn. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've been lying here all morning having a difficult time with a screw underneath my car. But yet I took the time to call you because I'm really upset about the way CEOs and hopefully not those in your alliance, but I can't help but think they do. We're having terrible time with customer service. We're having terrible times with voicemails and these mechanical voices. And we bought your product and it goes bad, or we've had your service and it's not good, and we have to wait for hours. We get put off, you know. And then the worst thing yet, we get people offshore, or even those you hire onshore, who cannot understand the English that's being spoken to them, so they ask us over and over again the same thing. And we have to take our precious time, especially those who have home-based businesses, to deal with all of this stuff. Could you please bring this back through your organization to a level that we have relations with companies that have CEOs that care about us?
Paul, you bring up a good point. Frankly, I think it's an opportunity. If one company provides better customer service and is known for that, they may get greater market share. But let me ask you, I don't know which company you may be thinking of, but what would you do if you were the CEO? How would you fix that problem?
Well, first of all, despite the problems I'm having with the federal government, I love this country where I live in. I would make a very concerted effort in management, that management be a very strong management so that it can have regular meetings with its employees and then test them to make sure they're up to speed. And as far as products are concerned, I can't wait for the day when I see more made in America on our component parts and what have you, so things don't break down so much, so that we can employ Americans again, which would be my whole thrust. I want Americans employed. I cannot stand this offshore stuff with putting our jobs offshore. I mean, right on down to customer service, when I call some guy and he can't relate to me and I'm telling him where I am and I want to get to a place for repair, he's in India. He doesn't know a thing about my streets. He doesn't know a thing about me. And he can't understand, you know, my level of consternation. He's only concerned with, you know, something that is basic, and that's making a living in India. I would stop this offshore thing as best I could.
You gave a direct answer. How do you respond to that? The whole offshoring, I mean, that's the problem. CEOs deservedly, I think, get the blame on that, yet at the same time, from the standpoint of the board of directors and the people they have to report to, they have no choice but to go for the bottom line. How do you resolve that conflict?
Well, the world's changed. The CEOs have a responsibility to a whole group of stakeholders, between the shareholders, between the employees, their customers. It's a very challenging job, and offshoring is a real world. Once the Berlin Wall came down, it created millions of people that all of a sudden had access to the world economy, and many of them very well educated and able to provide services at far less. If you're the CEO, would you jeopardize your entire company and your employees' jobs by paying a whole lot more money for people doing the same jobs?
Yeah, but the bottom line is
then they all lose it.
Then firing. I mean, that's what you do. You lay them off.
Well, let me give you a story or a question to ask you how you'd make a decision.
All right.
You're the chief executive of your household, or pretend that you are.
Yeah.
Right, right. All right.
God, that's the best laugh I've had all day. Yeah,
so let's pretend you want to outsource the maintenance of your yard. You want to mow your lawn.
Right.
And you have the kid down the street hears you want to do that. So he says, okay, I've got a little time. I'll do it for $20, Ron.
Mm-hmm.
However, somebody, some kid across town, across the other side of the tracks, another town over, says really wants the job. He really needs it. His family's poor. He says, I'll ride my bike over. I'll mow your lawn for $2. Which way do you decide?
Probably get the kid for $2 and give him 10.
All right. You just off sort. Well, and the kid right next door didn't get $20.
Yeah. All right. Ruth in San Mateo asked this question. Does your guest CEO really think he gets told the truth? Because I always found CEOs are surrounded by yes men. Thus, they can't really run the company well because they don't really know what's happening internally.
There's always more sides to a story than one side, and not every CEO knows everything that's going on within their companies. But as far as being told the truth, the entire culture of the Alliance of Chief Executives is candidness, being very direct and honest. Frankly, other CEOs can tell. They know when somebody's not telling the truth very quickly. And if they're not, frankly, they don't fit within the Alliance of Chief Executives.
Bye. 10:54, talking CEOs with Paul Whitkay. Look, you alluded to it before in terms of the responsibilities, but let me make it a basic question. The basic question is, does a CEO have only the responsibility to the shareholders? And if not, what is the responsibility in other areas, be it social or others?
Well, I think the CEOs do have a responsibility to be good corporate citizens. First of all, do no harm. Don't break the law. Act in that ethical manner. Be good corporate citizens. I think a good example is back in the Hurricane Katrina. Didn't get much publicity, but there was an awful lot of a number of companies that responded far faster than our federal government did. To Anheuser-Busch made water instead of beer and sent down. One of our local companies, Clorox, sent 50,000 tons of bleach for disinfectants. Coca-Cola sent water instead. Home Depot opened things up. They didn't get a lot of press for this. They didn't do it for the press. They did it because they're part of our community, and when they saw somebody else in need, they came to the rescue. That's what we do as Americans.
That's the plus side. Of course, the bottom is, if you start thinking Katrina, you think of the CEO of the Mike Brownie, you've done a heck of a job. FEMA. I mean, look at that. How does a guy like that get to be a CEO?
I have no idea.
Explain
it was a government official. I'm not sure he's quite... He was a chief executive of a government agency.
And before that, he was a big executive with an International Arabian Horse Federation, so that says a lot. Joyce in Dublin, good morning.
Good morning. A small company in the North Bay board recently hired its CEO on the peninsula, and he said, bring the company to me. And they're in the process of doing that, and so those 70 employees are not driving the Golden Gate for an hour and a half each way. So they're leaving, which I guess is the intention. That way they don't get benefits. I mean, they have to leave on their own. And he's going to relocate a struggling but important company to the area and long time and a support company. But is that kind of a large ego?
That's a tough one. What would you do if you were the board or the CEO? What would you do if you've done the board and you truly believe that CEO could turn around that company?
Joyce?
Yeah.
He asked your question.
Pardon?
What would you do, Joyce?
Well,
if you were the board,
I probably wouldn't have hired that CEO because I don't see that as a solution.
You may be right. It certainly hurts the local economy for the North Bay. But it's a decision the owners do have a right to make. Whether it's the right one or not, they'll live with it. And unfortunately, you're right, the employees sometimes have to pay for that by either switching companies or increasing their commute. So it's there's compromises everywhere, and that was a bad one.
In San Rafael, hey, Phil, good morning.
Hi. I find this discussion pretty unseemly, and I think the previous call illustrates it. This gentleman is not going to say anything bad about a CEO. He's head of an organization of them. You know, frankly, while a CEO may be the cream at the top of the corporate milk jug, some of it's gone rancid to terrible, terrible effect, not only on the economy of the country, but individual people. I mean, for every Enron or WorldCom, there are many smaller companies who have just been ruined by bad decision-making. And I don't see that this gentleman is addressing it. If this organization has value, perhaps it should be to help CEOs make good decisions that are driven by real corporate need and communities rather than financial gain.
Well, frankly, that is why they come together, is to hopefully make better decisions and avoid many mistakes by sharing their ideas. They certainly make mistakes. If there's one thing I've certainly learned is that CEOs are human beings just like the rest of us. They just happen to run companies. And many times it's just serendipity that they came to be running this company, and they're the one in charge, and they are fallible. You're right. But frankly, the ones I know, the vast majority, there certainly are the crooks out there that get in the papers, but by far the vast majority of CEOs are really trying to do the right thing, be good human beings, and achieve something for their customers, their employees, and do good things.
But yeah, let's wrap it up on this. I mean, I'm not saying a matter of crooks, but you do understand the last couple of decades we've been living in this world of bean-counting MBAs. And it's hard to look at those people as saying, well, yeah, they're human beings and they're like here. I mean, they're just bottom-line people.
No, I frankly rarely meet CEOs that are truly driven by money. They're not stupid. They need to make a profit to continue to reinvest and grow the
companies. I'm not talking about money for personal gain. I'm talking about money for the company.
They need money to continue to grow and compete. If you look at, you can look at this world in two different ways. You can look at how it's going to hell in a handbasket, or you can look at it as the incredible growth. The economy is growing. The new technology. Look at what you're buying for Christmas this year, or for gifts, or for iPods and Xboxes, or plasma televisions. The technology gains and the way we're living our lives is incredibly different. And medical advances. There's an awful lot of things that CEOs bring. But they're fallible.
And if you'd like to learn more about the organization and what Paul is talking about, it's AllianceOfCEOs.com. AllianceOfCEOs.com. He's Paul Witt-Kay. Hey, good hour. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for inviting me.